since we did talk about suspension last month, and as you were hitting the door last time, we said, you know, we never got to talk about active suspension. So I would like to hear about that, because there's something other than just your car kind of hanging there off of its frame.
Yeah, yeah. Active suspension is not a new development, but it's been enhanced significantly. And so they're oftentimes referred to as Generation 1 or Generation 2 or Generation 3 suspension systems on a certain model. But the premise is that based off of the driver's commands, you know, based off of the steering wheel location compared to the center line, so what's the driver wanting to do, go left, go right, and also intertwined with the brake system, the suspension system responds in an appropriate way.
So essentially leans into a curve or something?
Well, it'll stiffen itself up where it would tend to be really loaded. And so if you were imagine yourself banking a hard left turn, the weight of the vehicle is going to shift to the right, and the car is going to know that because it's been programmed, obviously, to know certain conditions. So it sees the steering wheel angle go left, and then it stiffens up the right side of the car to essentially, and these are safety features. They're not just luxury or performance features. Studies show that if a worn suspension system causes a destabilization and therefore causes a higher risk for accident. And so back to the hard left curve, and you're going 45 miles an hour through the mountains, and if that car stabilizes itself, then the driver's going to have more control over that vehicle versus the opposite. If, say, all that weight shifts to the right on the hard left turn, and then you come out of that turn and the weight then shifts hard the other direction, the car is going to sway back and forth quite a bit. And that, and then combine that with some irregularities in the road surface, and now you have a traction problem. The car is bouncing or flopping left to right, and the wheels might, they'll come off the ground just a tiny little bit with irregularities in the road surface, and then you lose traction. And before you know it, the driver's in a very dangerous situation.
Let us talk about brakes now, and let me invite the audience again to get into the conversation, because you may have things going on with the brakes in your car, weird sounds, weird smells, weird feelings as you tap the brake pedal. Let's hear about those in this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So if you do, all right, let's talk about some of the basic noises that come out when you press the brake pedal. The grinding one, I guess, we'll start there, because that's the one that kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies when you step on the brakes and you get this kind of feeling and sound.
Yeah, and that should give you the heebie-jeebies, because that basically means that there's no brake material, no friction material left in between the backing plate of the brake pad itself. So the friction material is glued onto a metal plate, and that metal plate sits in a bracket. And, of course, the brake caliper squeezes on that metal plate and forces the friction material against the rotating disc. And when that friction material, it's a wear and tear item, so it just wears out.
It's meant to. I mean, it's meant to be disposed, but you're going to replace it every, several thousand miles.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you hear the grinding noise that you just described, which is just a really abrasive, a metal-on-metal, we call it metal-on-metal noise, that generally means that there's no friction material left. And the metal plate, which the friction material is supposed to be glued to, is now contacting the metal disc, which the friction material is supposed to slow down. The disc rotates at the same speed as the wheel, and those are called brake rotors or brake discs. Mm-hmm. And the metal on metal is those two pieces contacting each other. And it'll eventually stop the vehicle. But when a brake system is worn to that point, there's a lot of other damage that results as well, because your brake piston, the pistons inside the brake caliper travel excessively in order to squeeze.
Oh, they're having to go a lot farther because there's nothing in front of them.
Exactly, and they weren't designed to extend or protrude that far out of their ram. You know, it's a piston and a ram, and there's a little dust seal in there, and there's fluid behind there. That's how you're transferring the force from your pedal to the brake caliper, is you're forcing fluid through a confined space. And so what happens is the brake calipers then begin to leak.
Yikes. And so when if you do get metal on metal and you drive for a long time, you're going to ruin not just your you're going to have to get a lot more parts replaced, it sounds like, and probably get your rotors turned, I guess, is what usually happens, right?
Well, if it's metal on metal, the rotors get replaced. And actually, nowadays, there's not a lot of rotor turning happening anymore. The price of rotors has come down so much that it's actually more cost-effective to just replace the rotors with new ones than it is to resurface old rotors. We have a brake lathe at the shop, and we do surface some rotors and some drum applications, but that's generally they're either very, very rare brake drums that you can't find new ones anymore, or extremely expensive brake rotors that still have enough material left on them and they can be resurfaced. But it's not very common anymore with, like I said, the price of new rotors being so affordable.
So when I think about somebody wearing out all the lining on their brakes, it's kind of like trying to use a pencil eraser. When the rubber is all gone, you're just going to scratch the crap out of the paper.
Exactly. That's a great analogy.
All right. So I mean, what are we talking about for a brake job? I mean, what does it usually cost to get those parts replaced? And you know, are you going to get some indications before you get that bad grinding sound?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question, too. A lot of people, if they're sensitive and in tune with their car, they hear a very, very slight, I'm going to make this noise. It sounds like, weak, 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 like that. And it's very, very light. And they'll usually hear that in the parking lot if their window is down at slow speeds. And
without the brakes,
brakes on, mm-hmm. Yes. It's just kind of a rotating noise. It's happening with the speed of the vehicle. And, you know, most people hear it going maybe 5 to 10 miles an hour at the grocery store parking lot and their windows down. You're not going to probably hear it with the window up. And what that noise is there's a little metal tang that protrudes about 2 millimeters away from that metal backing plate that the brake friction material is glued to. And in essence, what's happening is once the friction material goes beneath a certain amount, which is usually about 2 millimeters, then the metal tang is actually sticking out farther than the friction material. And when you step on the brake pad, the noise will go away. But just driving down the road, irregularities in the flatness of the disc will catch that metal tang. And that's why you'll hear that very, very slight squeaking noise.
So every revolution, you're gonna get this squeak again.
Yep, mm-hmm. And that's meant to alert the driver. It's an old, primitive mechanical system, which should alert the driver to bring the car to the shop. And they usually describe that noise and say, "My car is making this very strange noise, but it goes away when I put the brakes on." And then when we tell them they need brakes, it just doesn't make sense to them.
You know, because what? I'm not hearing the grinding sound.
It goes away when I put the brakes on. But in actuality, that's kind of what it's designed to do. And then with more modern cars and some of the German cars, they actually have a two-wire brake pad sensor mounted into the brake pad. And so it, in essence, does the same thing. Once the friction material becomes small enough or the depth of the friction material reduces to the point where the sensor actually picks up it senses the brake rotor. It
just
turns on the light.
Two wires connect, you're closing the circuit. Yeah,
and it's a magnet. It's a magnet type of sensor. So it turns on a light in the dash and alerts the driver that, hey, your front brakes or your rear brakes are at the point where they need to be replaced.
Zach Edwards, our guest once again this month on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the proprietor of Ashland Automotive and our guest for a regular segment we call The Squeaky Wheel. And we are literally talking about The Squeaky Wheel this month. Also the grinding wheel and other things that can go wrong with your brakes. But you might have something else with your car you'd want to talk about. So give us a call here on the Exchange. We'll see if we can suss it out. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. You can send your emails with your short, pithy car event to jx@jeffnet.org. You were talking about replacing of rotors, and these are the actual discs and the disc brakes that they've been common in cars for 50 years now, haven't they?
Oh yeah, I think so.
But now, see, you were talking about replacing them, though. I mean, over the time, even that you have been a mechanic, has there been a big change in attitudes towards parts that get replaced versus repaired? It seems like so many more things now are just like they're taken off your car and something new goes on.
Certainly, and it has to do with manufacturing mostly. You know, as manufacturing has been shifted to China, just gobs of manufacturers are able to offer parts at much lower prices. And, you know, even German parts manufacturers are manufacturing in China. American parts manufacturers are manufacturing in China. And I think, you know, most of the listeners probably know that there's lots of advantages to manufacturing over there, and one of them is the reduced price of labor. And labor is one of the main factors in manufacturing costs. So these parts are available to us now at just actually shockingly low prices, sometimes compared to what they used to be available at. So with the brake rotor, you know, if there's a 400% reduction in the cost of the rotor, it's no longer cost effective to the customer to try and refurbish their existing brake rotor, because there's more complications to it. For one, the technician, there's a minimum thickness allowed of that brake rotor, because the rotor has to be able to dissipate heat, and so the minimum thickness is going to be stamped into the inside of the lip of that rotor. And there's also going to be, in our information system that we use, it's also going to have that specification. But that's a minimum thickness that has to be available after the rotor is surfaced. And so what can happen is you have a technician who takes a rotor off, they measure it, and, you know, they have a good idea of how much material they're going to need to remove from that rotor to make it truly flat again, or we call it true, to make the rotor true. But oftentimes that rotor falls in the gray area. It's like, I don't know if there's enough material left on this one or not. There might be, depends on how much I have to remove. And so then they have to use judgment, put it on the brake lathe, start removing it, truing the rotor. They get the rotor completely flat and true again, and then they take a final measurement and find that it's below the minimum thickness. Now all that work is for nothing, because the rotor has to be discarded by law. And also just, you know, by good practice, a lot of people might not understand the heat dissipation component of that minimum thickness specification. It's not just an arbitrary number. It has to do with, you know, how well is this rotor going to be able to hold heat without warping or becoming imperfect, which then becomes a safety issue.
The thinner the, yeah, I can see how that would, yeah, the warping is going to happen if it gets that hot and it's that thin.
Yeah, and it happens very quickly. And then, of course, the customer, after just a short amount of time, is back with brake concerns again, maybe a pulsating pedal. You know, a lot of your customers might experience a pulsating pedal when applying the brakes on, say, an off-ramp, on, you know, coming off the freeway. They feel the pedal vibrating or pulsating, and that is imperfections in the brake rotor kicking the piston on the caliper back, and that, of course, is transferring the force of the brake fluid back to the pedal. So it's a kind of a reverse effect. When you push on the brake pedal, you're forcing fluid toward each wheel. And when the brakes
are pumping you instead of the other way around.
Exactly, exactly.
Zach Edwards is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel. Your car care questions welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Got a call here from Connie and Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
Good morning, gentlemen. I want to say I always appreciate listening to your this part of the program. Explanations are really, really helpful.
Well, good.
Thanks, Connie.
This is not about brakes, however. This is about a leaking antifreeze, and I noticed that I had gasket material in a leak, and I took it to my garage that's been doing my car for years. I should preface this by saying that this is a 40-year-old Datsun.
All right.
Jeff's favorite kind of car.
Exactly.
I know, but I'm just saying that there's a lot of garages I couldn't go to. They wouldn't take the car. They wouldn't work on it because it's so old.
Sure.
So, and they initially they just replaced the thermostat, which had been working fine, and of course it still leaked, and there was nothing leaking underneath. And finally, I pressured them and said, you know, what about gaskets and all this sort of thing? So they finally did a compression check, and they replaced the head gasket and went through that very expensive process. And now it's still leaking antifreeze. And, you know, they said they did all these compression tests, et cetera. I wonder, especially when I have a long-established garage and there's very few alternatives, how do you get a second opinion, or how do I approach this, you know, can I go to other garages and say, would you just test this engine and see, you know, where this is leaking and then take it back to them, or how do you approach this?
Okay, good question there. Thanks for that, Connie. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Connie, that you just illustrated why a lot of shops don't want to work on such an old car, because it can be very difficult to make your customer happy with such an old vehicle, and it's not the customer's fault by any means. It's just a combination of how old the car is, how many components on that car are 40 years old and have countless miles recorded in its history. And so back to your problem, it's certainly okay to go get a second opinion at another shop. And how I would choose that shop is, you know, do a little research, drive by their location, maybe walk in, look around. I've written about this on my website too. You can reference it if it's too much to take in right now. But how do you choose that shop? You ask questions about their warranty. And is the warranty a nationwide warranty, or is it just a local warranty? How many miles, how many years does the warranty last? Are the technicians certified? You can kind of get a feel for the professional, or the commitment to professionalism, by what the shop looks like on the inside and out in the garage, and in the waiting area. Their curbside appeal, you can kind of gauge it by that. And so that's how I would select my shop. And as a matter of fact, that's how I do select. You know, my son's car broke down the other day in Eugene, and I went. I needed to get it towed somewhere because it wasn't a repair that I could do in the driveway, and I had to find. I was in the same situation as you, and so that's what I look for. And then back to your problem of the coolant leak. The coolant leak can be difficult. But on your car, it's a pretty simplified cooling system. And it might be that almost every single thing in your cooling system needs to be replaced, just because it's all very similarly aged and has the same amount of miles. But it's not uncommon for a thermostat to start leaking, and then that thermostat and the gasket is replaced, which allows the cooling system to pressurize again. They operate between 13 and 16 pounds per square inch of pressure. And how that pressure is created is heat builds up as the cooling system absorbs the heat from the engine. And as it builds up, and of course you have a cap on the radiator, which keeps
the boiling point artificially low, doesn't it?
It maintains the boiling point, and it allows the system to absorb heat past the boiling point. And it does that by keeping it pressurized. It's just like holding the lid on a pot of water that's on the stove. If you were to quickly pull that off, the water would rapidly start to boil if you could hold it like a pressure cooker.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that when you replace one faulty part in a system, particularly in this case in the aging cooling system, then it repressurizes the system and you start find other weak parts?
If there are indeed other weak parts that are susceptible, they oftentimes choose that moment to rupture a leak, because the system hasn't been operating at pressure for quite some time. Say that thermostat was leaking for the last 2.5 years and you've just been kind of topping up the system. The system might have never been able to reach, you know, more than 9 pounds per square inch. You fix that leak, then the system is allowed to come up to 16 pounds per square inch where it's supposed to operate. And then this weak radiator says, I can't handle this pressure, and it springs a leak. You fix the radiator, and then the next thing springs a leak. And we've seen that more times than I'd like to admit on very, very old cars, where everything is
just
old.
Must you keep referring to 70s Datsuns as very, very old cars? Now, come on.
Yeah. And so the head gasket that they replaced on Connie's car is actually, those are the most elusive leaks, because oftentimes they're leaking internally. So the coolant is leaking into the combustion chamber and then being burned with the air and fuel mixture. And you don't really, the coolant is disappearing, but it's not falling onto the ground.
All right, so you're not going to see a drip from the tailpipe or something?
Right, so how you see that is you pull out spark plugs, and they have a burn pattern on the spark plug that's very unique, when it's been burning coolant. And so you know, it just could be that you need lots of cooling system work on that old Datsun.
Wow. All right, a question back to brakes then, about if your brakes are not terribly old, but you're hearing a squeak, not when they're off, but when you push them on. Not a grinding, but a squeaking. What could that be? Mm-hmm.
So that oftentimes doesn't mean that you need your brakes replaced, but the result usually is that you do get your brakes replaced. And that's because, as I mentioned, you've got that metallic or that steel plate, which the friction material is glued to. And that steel plate, as it's being squeezed, there's two of them, sometimes there's four per wheel. And as that friction material is being pressed against the rotating brake rotor, there's miniature oscillations in the rotor happening. And the steel plate that the friction material is glued to is pivoting inside of a bracket.
Oh.
And there needs to be a little bit of grease actually in there, so that those brakes, so that the brake pads aren't metal on metal. And so the squeaking that you hear is oftentimes just the regular motion of the brake pad moving in and out. But to fix it is really, really hard without just replacing all of the brake components.
No way. Well, hence the term, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
It really needs to happen. Zach Edwards is our guest every month for the squeaky wheel. He is the owner of Ashland Automotive. He'll be back next month, and we'll take more calls and emails about fixing parts of your car. Thanks for joining us once again.
Hey, thank you.